As we approach the autumn equinox on Monday, the 22nd of September, sunrise will happen at 6:55, sunset at 7 p.m. By midweek, temperatures will be around 13 degrees centigrade, and it will be calmer and less windy.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the 20th of September for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. Before we get to the main business of the talking news, which is news, we start with a breaking item from Sandwell Visually Impaired about some activities coming up on Monday, the 22nd of September.
Women's Group, Macmillan Coffee Morning, Monday, 22nd of September from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. SVI Women's Group invite you all to come along to help raise money for Macmillan Cancer Support. Ladies of SVI, get baking or create your signature goodies. Gents, put your pinnies on and bake for us too. If you don't bake, bring a cake. If you want to, coffee, tea, hot chocolate and yummy cakes will be on offer for a kind donation. All monies raised will be given to Macmillan. All are welcome to join us and be tempted by our tasty treats. Please do try to be part of this fundraising event. Cake away will be on offer too. Summer Walk and Talk Programme. Our members have said that the walks so far have been very interesting and informative, that they help you get your step count up. Come along to take part in our last walk and talk session. Blackheath Walk, Monday, 22nd of September at 4 p.m. We will meet outside Lloyds Bank, High Street, Blackheath at 4 p.m. We will walk to the recently refurbished Britannia Park, experiencing the sights and sounds of autumn. We pass the site of the famous Church in the Garden and hear something about its history. We will explore more of Blackheath's civic and industrial past before heading to the Britannia Inn, Wetherspoons, for refreshments. This is a chance to sit down, relax and have something to eat and a chat with other walkers. This walk will be led by Nigel Self, funded through Sandwell Active Travel Community Grant.
We'll have the rest of that newsletter coming up towards the end of this week's edition. Now, that was breaking news. Here's a bit of news that's best part of a week old, but we couldn't bring it to you any sooner. But news of Sandwell bin collections changing. Yes, we have all the exciting news here.
From the 15th of September 2025, your waste and recycling collections in Sandwell are changing. We are moving to a dual stream recycling system and alternate weekly collections. Here's how it works. 1 week we'll empty your grey bin for non-recyclable waste. The next week we'll collect your blue lidded recycling bin for glass cans and plastic and your new blue recycling bag for paper and card. This means you will still have a collection every week, just alternating between non-recyclable waste and recycling. But don't worry, we're here to help you adjust. To help you get ready, before the 15th of September, you will receive a booklet with all you need to know, including a new collection calendar delivered through your letterbox. You will also receive a new blue recycling bag for paper and card delivered to your doorstep before your first collection in September.
Well, I think that video explains it pretty well, and you don't need to know much more than that, but I should be able to squeeze in a brief item with a bit more detail towards the end of the news, but we've more to squeeze into this edition. So here's a taste of what's coming up in this week's Talking News, courtesy of Express and Star Publications.
Some stories coming up from the papers, Wednesday 10th of September. Police crush 10 illegal street riders' bikes. Sandwell firm celebrates 225 years in business. Hygiene ratings for Sandwell eating places. Matt Phillips tells of his desire for Albion's promotion to the Premier League. Thursday's news. 6 community heroes to be honoured for their dedication. Friday's news. Successful delivery of more than 34,000 RSV vaccines across the region. Market is great, and that's official. Express and Star comment. Patients want better GP services. Saturday's news. Knowing if your hearing is fading enough to need hearing aids. Mason has waited no time making his mark at the Albion. Police probe racially motivated attack. Saturday's news. NHS trust to be investigated in maternity services review. How to cook the perfect porridge. West Brom Building Society opens free community spaces. Tuesday's news. Baggies winning start to the season. And other local football team news. Campaigners hail new law after Hillsborough. Landmark West Bromwich Butchers shop to close. Man arrested after racially aggravated rape.
All that and more coming up in the next 2 hours or more, including the radio and TV listings from Talking News Federation, with the rest of the news of what SVI activities are coming up in the next month or so. Let's get straight on with this week's news, with the first day read by Mia.
Hi everyone, it's Mia. And today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles from Wednesday, the 10th of September. I hope everyone is enjoying the move into autumn and keeping safe. Let's begin. Man pleads guilty to stabbing older man in High Street disorder. A 22-year-old man has appeared before a Crown Court judge charged with wounding another man during disorder in Cradley Heath, High Street. Alfie Evitts of Oldbury admitted an offence of wounding Bazaar Suleiman and admitted an offence of possessing a lock knife in a public place when he appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court yesterday. The incident related to disorder breaking out in High Street on August the 3rd, which resulted in police officers being called to the scene and arrests being made. Judge Amy Jacobs told the defendant, "You have pleaded guilty to two very serious offences, but I'm not going to sentence you today. I'm going to ask the probation service to prepare a report so that when you are sentenced, I or the judge who deals with it has a rounder picture of your circumstances. I've listed your case for October the 10th, added the judge. Evitts of Bernard Road, Oldbury, was remanded in custody until the sentencing date. A 42-year-old man who is also charged in connection with the disorder case is due to appear at the same court on the same date. This is a warning. Police deal antisocial riders crushing blow. 10 illegal off-road motorcycles were quickly turned into scrap metal as they were crushed with immense force after being seized by police. West Midlands Police has teamed up with Samwell Council to crush 10 illegal off-road bikes that were seized from the streets of Wednesbury over the last few weeks. At the scene of Autobit scrap metal on Clark's Lane, Willenhall, yesterday, a stack of 10 bikes sat idly next to each other, awaiting their turn to be thrown into the industrial crushing machine. The motorbikes, which only days before may have been riding illegally on roads in the West Midlands, were quickly turned to scrap metal, as police warned of increased action against those who ride illegally on our streets. The action comes as the force continues to work proactively with local councils in the West Midlands to stop nuisance and illegal off-road bikers, with the force urging that this is only the beginning. Our message is clear. If we spot you driving dangerously, we will seize your bike, Sergeant David Eales said from the Wednesbury Neighbourhood Policing Team. This is the first time we have done this in Sandwell, and there have been some in Dudley and other areas as well. We will be seeing more of this action in the future as we work closer with the councils. Upon being thrown into the crusher by an industrial scrap metal crane, the vehicles, which would have cost hundreds of pounds, were crushed into a mixture of disfigured scrap steel, plastic and rubber. Sergeant Eales described the dangers that these machines once posed to the public. He said, "These off-road bikes aren't up to the standards of being ridden on the roads. The fact that they are being ridden antisocially and dangerously can cause issues not only to the rider, but also to the public as well. A lot of these riders aren't using helmets, which, if they come off the bike, can cause very serious injuries. The risks to the rider could include significant injury or even death." Sandwell Council leader, Councillor Kerry Carmichael, admitted the event, saying it was good to see the vehicles taken off the road and that the action would continue as they work with the force. Foundry firm celebrates 225 years in business. A historic Black Country manufacturing firm has celebrated an incredible 225 years in business by throwing a garden party for its 350-strong workforce. Wesley Group, Europe's largest non-ferrous foundry and engineering group, is believed to be the oldest business in Dudley to have traded continuously since the Industrial Revolution. The company was established by William Wesley at Queen's Cross in Dudley in 1800, before moving in 1955 to Cradley Heath, where its HQ remains today, with an eighth-generation member of the Wesley family now at the helm. The business, headquartered in Dalton Road, is a bronze metal casting business which supplies the defence industry primarily, but it also has successful subsidiary companies including Wesley Plastics and Runflat International, both in Cradley Heath. Tom Wesley, director of Wesley Group, said, "We believe it's the oldest business in Dudley, and it's still in the same family ownership." The 32-year-old said the secret to the business's continuing success is being adaptable to changing markets, adding, "It's hard to adapt and evolve over 225 years to continue making relevant products. What we now make now is nothing to do with what we started out making. When we started making stuff for the steel industry locally, we're now in the defence industry making parts that go all over the world. It's a very different business from what it was. We have a big spread within the group of different products, so we're not reliant on one industry or one particular area, which means we're able to weather the storms in the industry when the oil and gas price changes or defence is in vogue or not in vogue. We're able to position the business." Company chairman Tom Wesley, age 73, has been involved in the family business since the 1970s and still enjoys being involved with the firm. A garden party with stalls, tug of war, croquet, garden games and refreshments was held on Wednesday, September the 3rd at Wedgwood Cricket Club in Stoke-on-Trent, bringing together the company's 350 employees from its sites in Cradley Heath, Stoke-on-Trent and Cleheaton in Leeds. Tom Wesley Jr. said, "It was a fantastic day, despite the weather, and was a great opportunity to get everyone together and celebrate a significant milestone within the company history. We're more excited about the future than we've ever been. There's more opportunity out there than we've seen in a very long time. And our plan is to grow the business in a sustainable way, so we can be here in another 225 years. This article has a couple of pictures. So the first picture contains three individuals. We see CEO Eric Cartlett, Tom Wesley Sr. and Tom Wesley Jr. All smiling. They seem happy to celebrate the 225 years in the firm. Then we have another image where we see, what I'm assuming is everyone, is the 350 employees from the sites, all celebrating the 225 years in business. Hygiene ratings handed out following latest inspections. New set of Food Standard Agency assessments are released for West Midlands. A new set of restaurants, cafes and takeaways across the West Midland have been handed food hygiene ratings following their recent inspections. Food Standards Agency ratings have been given out to establishments across Wolverhampton, Walsall, Sandwell, Dudley and South Staffordshire. Sandwell. We have a 5-star rating for Marie's Cafe at 48 Walsall Street, Wensbury. Another 5-star rating for Hallam Restaurant at Sandwell General Hospital, Linden, West Bromwich. There's a 4-star rating for The Cookhouse at Unit E1, Brook Street, Business Brook Street, Tipton. A 5-star rating for the Sandwell Park Golf Club at West Bromwich. A 4-star rating for Caprino's at 2 Jowett's Lane, West Bromwich. A 3-star rating for King Warhouse at 7 Dog Kennel Lane, Albury. And lastly, a 3-star rating for Shawarma Al Chef at 23 King Street, Smethwick. Phillips drawing on his experience. Nat Phillips has outlined his burning desire to help Albion achieve promotion to the Premier League. The defender has played a key role in the Baggies' strong start to the season, netting his first goal for the club to secure victory at Stoke City before the international break. Despite it still being early in the campaign, with Albion sitting second and unbeaten, Phillips has already set his sights on achieving something special. I don't think it's a secret, but that's promotion, the goal of ours, said Phillips. But it is very early in the season, so we need to carry on as we have been doing and keep up the good work. The former Liverpool defender is no stranger to securing promotion to the top flight, having been part of the Bournemouth side that finished second in the Championship in 2022. Asked whether he hopes his experience can help, he continued, I would like to think so, yes. I've been in those moments where there's high expectations, much like here at Albion. My goal is to get promoted, however that may be. So the standards that we need to meet are high. I've had experience in that environment before, so hopefully I can draw on that. This season has marked new beginnings at the club, with the arrival of new head coach Ryan Mason and several new players. And from what he has seen and experienced so far, Phillips, who has become a very popular figure among supporters, believes there is no fear in this Albion side. In the moments where things have got tough, I feel like, so far this season, we stood up to the challenge and stood tall. So long it may not continue, he said.
Hello, this is Jan Lloyd, reading articles from the Express and Star, the 11th of September. Six community heroes to be honoured for dedication by Dan Stacey. Six community heroes from the region will receive their British Empire medals at an event this month. 11 people, including four from Sandwell and two from Warsaw, will receive the medals on Thursday, September the 25th at the banqueting suite at Birmingham Council House on Victoria Square. The West Midlands is celebrating BEM recipients from this year's King's Birthday Honours and New Year's Honours, with the medals being presented by the Lord Lieutenant for West Midlands, Derek Anderson, CBE. All recipients have made an active contribution to help others, making the region a richer, kinder place, and are passionate about what they do. Mr. Anderson said, "The investiture is a wonderful opportunity to recognise some exceptional people who have dedicated their lives to improving the lives of others in the region. It is heartwarming to know that we are so fortunate to have people that give so much and make a big difference to the communities where they live." Here is a list of the six winners and the good works that they have done. Kerry Green for services to the community in Rowley Regis. Sergeant Major Instructor Kerry Green has served with the Army Cadet Force since 2011 and positively impacted the lives of hundreds of young people in the last 11 years. Through her dedicated mentor and leadership, she has recruited disenfranchised young people, and some cadets have become accomplished musicians. She has gone out of her way to support disadvantaged children from underprivileged backgrounds and is truly inspirational. Kerry has taken on the role of media officer for Gwent and Powys Army Cadet Force and has achieved a 4% recruitment increase across the county. Deborah Lowe for services to the community in Rowley Regis. In 2002, Deborah formed Youth on Stage and for over 20 years has enabled young people to experience performing in the musical theatre. During this time, around 300 young people have been nurtured and encouraged by her to perform on stage, with some going on to enjoy careers on the stage in the West End and all over the world. Deborah works as a supply teacher and fundraises to keep the group going and recently raised £6,000. Carl Ledbury for services to the community in Albury. Carl qualified as a paramedic in 1986 and for over 40 years has been committed to the NHS Ambulance Service. Carl has dedicated his life to supporting colleagues. He is a qualified counsellor and has taken up various positions to help others in the service. He was an avid supporter of the Ambulance Service's Benevolent Fund and became a trustee in 2016 when the charity was formed. He helps organise lectures and fundraising events for the care team and continues to support retired ambulance staff. Although he retired in 2012, he remained part of the West Midlands Ambulance Service ceremonial unit and as part of the bearers for the late Majesty the Queen in 2022. Balbir Singh for services to the community in Smethwick. Balbir is one of the most important contributors to the UK's Asian music scene and is often referred to as the godfather of Asian music in the UK. He is a world-renowned Bhangra artist who has performed and recorded music since 1967 when he formed the Bajangi group with his brother as teenagers. The group disbanded 12 years later, but Balbir continued to record under the Bajangi group name and has played in many venues, including temples and charity events. In 2009, he received a House of Commons Award for his contribution to Punjabi culture and Bhangra music in the UK. David Payne for services to the community in Aldridge. David is an active member of the West Bromwich community and is company captain of the 14th West Bromwich Boys Brigade Company. He has been company captain for 40 years and in the Boys Brigade for 55 years. David raised over £10,000 in a sponsored walk from West Bromwich to Dufferin for the company and the West Midlands District Camping Centre. He is trustee and chairman of the G&TH Salter Trust Charity, the charity set up by the Salter brothers from their West Bromwich factory. Joan Lockley, for services to wildlife. Joan, aged 80, has dedicated her life to the rescue and rehabilitation of hedgehogs in the last 25 years and is the founder of West Midlands Hedgehog Rescue, personally funded a purpose-built hedgehog hospital in her garden. Over 7,000 injured and orphaned animals have been rescued, and in 2023 she took in 884 hedgehogs alone. Her expertise is appreciated by veterinary practices and the RSPCA, and last year she created a calendar to raise funds. And the article is accompanied by two photographs, one of the Lord Lieutenant Derek Anderson wearing his uniform and standing at a lectern ready to give out awards, and the other one of Joan Lockley, who is standing cuddling a hedgehog, which seems quite a prickly thing to do, doesn't it? Alarm that Omaze draws are normalising gambling in the UK. McDonald's Monopoly also highlighted as introducing children to a later habit by Josie Clark. Prize draws such as Omaze and McDonald's Monopoly are normalising gambling, particularly for children and young people, a charity has warned. Gamble Aware said survey findings suggested a link between prize draws such as Omaze and McDonald's Monopoly and gambling harm, with latest data suggesting that 27% of people who gamble are estimated to be experiencing a risk of problems from taking part in such games. Prize draws are not currently regulated as a licensed form of gambling, but Gamble Aware said they had many similarities to certain types of gambling and people may not understand the risks associated with them. The charity raised its concerns about prize draws as it released its fifth annual treatment and support survey data, finding that demand for treatment and support for gambling problems has almost doubled since 2020. The YouGov survey found that almost one in three adults who are experiencing a risk of problems from gambling want treatment, support or advice, compared with one in five in 2020. The data also shows an increase in the proportion of adults who are experiencing problem gambling, up from 2.4% in 2020 to 3.8% in 2024. The number of people affected by family or friends gambling has increased from 6.5% in 2020 to 8.1% in 2024, an estimated 4.3 million adults. The charity said estimates suggest 2 million children may be living in households with an adult experiencing problem gambling. Gamble Aware Chief Executive Zoe Osman said, "Gambling can be highly addictive with devastating impacts on people's lives, relationships and financial stability. And while it is encouraging that more people have sought help, this rise may also pinpoint a growing public health crisis. We are increasingly alarmed by how gambling is being normalised and how frequently people, especially young people, are exposed to gambling." Sainsbury's to use facial recognition technology in shops. Sainsbury's has said it plans to introduce facial recognition across its UK shops as it launches the controversial technology in its first stores. The UK's second largest supermarket chain has informed staff in two stores it will start an 8-week trial before potentially rolling out the technology nationwide. Sainsbury's has said the technology is part of its efforts to identify shoplifters and curb a sharp increase in retail crime in recent years. However, privacy campaigners describe the plans as chilling. Use of facial recognition in shops has been heavily criticised in recent years, with rival Asda facing thousands of complaints after launching its own similar trial earlier in the year. Bosses at Sainsbury's, which has more than 1,400 shops across the country, says the plans are not about monitoring colleagues or customers. This week, the retailer will start using the technology in its Sydenham superstore in London and its Bath Oldfield Sainsbury's local store. It is working with facial recognition business FaceWatch as part of the trial. Fellow retailers Home Bargains, Flannels and Sports Direct have reportedly used similar FaceWatch technology in stores to identify shoplifters. The technology will be used by the company to help it identify and potentially ban people who are violent, aggressive or steal in the store. Sainsbury's said that records will be instantly deleted if the software does not recognise the face of the reported individuals. It added that the system uses an alert based on criminal behaviour submitted by the store or other retailers using FaceWatch nearby. Madeline Stone, Senior Advocacy Officer at privacy group Big Brother Watch, said Sainsbury's decision to trial Orwellian facial recognition technology in its shops is deeply disproportionate and chilling. Sainsbury's should abandon this trial and the government must urgently step in to prevent the unchecked spread of this invasive technology. Sainsbury's said incidents of theft, abuse and threatening behaviour continue to rise despite working with the police and government, adding that it is affecting Sainsbury's teams across the UK daily. Simon Roberts, Sainsbury's chief executive, said, "We have listened to the deep concerns our colleagues and customers have, and they're right to expect us to act. The retail sector is at a crossroads facing rising abuse, antisocial behaviour and violence. We must put safety first, and we understand that facial recognition technology can raise valid questions about data and privacy. This trial and subsequent rollout is not about monitoring colleagues or our valued customers. It's focused solely on identifying serious offenders who have committed acts of violence, aggression or theft, helping our teams prevent further harm." Temple Leads Way on Cutting Carbon Levels by Beverly Rademacher. The UK's oldest and largest Sikh Gurdwara in Smethwick is taking a lead on cutting carbon emissions with the installation of a huge solar panel system. And the installation is believed to be the largest of its kind on any Sikh place of worship in the world. Guru Nanak Gurdwara Smethwick has installed a 195-kilowatt solar panel system on its roof, featuring 420 high-performance solar panels producing 465 watts each, which is now actively powering the Gurdwara to deliver substantial environmental and financial benefits. The system, installed by a local business, Green Tech Hub Limited in Albury, will generate enough renewable electricity to power the equivalent of 50 homes annually, and it is expected to cut carbon emissions by approximately 78,277 kilograms each year. The saving is the equivalent to planting more than 3,500 trees annually. With a projected return on investment in a few years, the installation will provide long-term savings that will be reinvested into vital community projects and services. It also reinforces the Gurdwara's long-standing commitment to seva, selfless service, not just through faith and community outreach, but also by taking a lead on environmental responsibility. Parmjit Singh Dhillon, General Secretary of Guru Nanak Gurdwara Smethwick, said, "As part of our climate change strategy, we have delivered our first milestone. This is a proud moment for our community. By investing in renewable energy, Guru Nanak Gurdwara Smethwick is not only honouring Sikh values of seva, but also protecting the environment for future generations. We hope this inspires other places of worship and institutions to take similar steps. The Gurdwara welcomes more than 10,000 worshippers each week and serves 10,000 free meals through its Langar Hall." And the photographs accompanied by a group of gentlemen, presumably worshippers at the temple, who are standing on the roof of the temple next to the solar panels, which is a huge panel next to the great dome on the top of the temple. Comments section. Much credit should go to Judge Anthony Lowe for highlighting the crisis in our creaking justice system. The national spotlight was turned on Shrewsbury Crown Court when repair shop star Jay Blades appeared before the judge to deny a rape charge. Blades, of Claverley, outlined through his barrister the situation in which he finds himself as he awaits the chance to clear his name in front of a jury. He cannot work with a charge hanging over him. His life is effectively in a state of limbo until a trial can be organised, and that is unlikely to happen until September 2027. Judge Lowe spoke of the delay. He told the court, "It is not a proper justice system where people are having to wait that length of time for their trial, but I am afraid there is just nothing I can do. That, I am afraid, is just the state of where we are with outstanding trials." The judge has spoken out consistently in the same manner in previous cases, many of which have taken far longer than 2 years to get to court. There appears to be a particular problem in the West Midlands, but this is also a national issue that is partially hangover from the difficulties caused by COVID. But COVID lockdowns are long behind us and the situation should be sorted by now. Many people would say they have limited sympathy with defendants who have to wait for a trial, but the delays in the system also hang over victims who must wait to give their evidence, as well as witnesses who face the ordeal of cross-examination. Judge Lowe has previously spoken of an affront to justice and that something is going wrong, but is at the sharp end of the court system and his concerns should be taken very seriously and acted upon. Tap and go is a wonderful convenience to many and frightening prospect to others. A quick dab of a bank card or mobile phone and money is sent scurrying from your bank account. The limit at the moment is £100 and anything above that you have to go down the old-fashioned route of providing a PIN number. Now there are plans to increase that limit beyond the £100, possible allowing traders to offer goods worth several hundreds of pounds using tap and go technology. There are concerns about fraud, and tapping a card for a £4 sandwich is one thing, but how many people feel comfortable doing it for something worth £400 or £4,000? Modern society has an obsession with speed. Maybe when it comes to handing over money, a little less haste is better.
Hello, it's Rachel here, and I've got some readings for you from the 12th of September. Significant milestone met for delivery of RSV vaccinations across region. The NHS in the Black Country has announced the successful delivery of more than 34,000 respiratory syncytial virus RSV vaccinations to people over 75 and pregnant women. The milestone marks a significant achievement in the Black Country's commitment to keep older adults and newborns from the effects of RSV. The NHS said the RSV vaccine helps protect those eligible from a common virus that can make babies and older adults seriously ill. People are able to get a free RSV vaccination on the NHS if they are 28 weeks pregnant or more, with the vaccine recommended to help protect babies after they are born, people aged from 75 to 79, and for anyone who has turned 80 after September 1st, 2024. Dr. Ananta Dave, Chief Medical Officer for the NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board, praised the efforts of local healthcare teams. She said, "Since September 2024, we have given nearly 35,000 eligible people in the Black Country extra protection against RSV. This is down to the dedication of our NHS staff, GP practices, local maternity teams, pharmacies and community vaccinators. For most people, RSV causes mild, cold-like symptoms that usually resolve on their own. However, it can be much more serious for older adults and very young babies, particularly in the first few months of life. While RSV tends to peak during the winter, it's important to understand that the virus can circulate all year round, and the vaccine is a safe and effective way to reduce the risk of serious illness. With just one dose providing long-lasting protection, we strongly encourage everyone who is eligible to come forward and get vaccinated as soon as possible." Albion has the form heading into historic Hawthorns party by Johnny Drury. Tomorrow is set to be one of the most memorable days of Albion's season, more for the occasion than the result of the game. The game will be surrounded by events to mark the huge 125th anniversary of the Hawthorns, a real milestone in the history of the football club. The build-up to it has been superb and it is sure to be a fantastic occasion. However, when it comes to a huge event like this, you really do want to mark it down with a victory and you don't want to come up against a side who are your unofficial bogey team. But that is what Albion face when John Eustace and Derby County roll into town this weekend. The winless Rams head to the Hawthorns with just 2 points from their opening four league games, with their finest moment of the campaign coming courtesy of a penalty shootout win in the EFL Cup at Albion. But despite their ropey league form at the start of the campaign, there is nothing wrong with their recent record against Albion. The Baggies have won just 3 of their last league games against the Pride Park side, and just 5 times in the last 16 league meetings since the year 2000. The Bogey team statistics don't stop there either. Eustace himself has had a superb time managing against the Baggies during his time in charge of Birmingham City, Blackburn and most recently Derby. In 6 meetings with Albion, he has won 5 of them and drawn 1, and in his managerial career, he has yet to suffer defeat against them. They don't look like good omens for the Baggies, do they? However, despite the record between the two sides, the form guide and the way Albion have played so far under Ryan Mason is the only encouragement the Baggies head coach and players will need. 3 wins from the first 4 league matches, that could well have been 4, have gone hand in hand with impressive displays under the new regime. It may not be a completely new look Albion, but there is something different about Mason's side this season. A gutsy and tight defensive unit that can spring fast and impactful counter-attacks and look dangerous going forward. It is something Albion fans have not been treated to for some time. It is just 4 games in, and the international break has hopefully not stunted any momentum. But with the transfer window now shut and new faces through the door, Mason knows what he has to work with going forward. He has Charlie Taylor and Samuel Illing Jr. to choose from after their deadline day arrivals, with the latter knocking on the door for a starting spot this weekend. On paper, it doesn't look like a formality, but given the way the season has gone so far, the odds are heavily weighted in Albion's favour. Hopefully, the head-to-head form book doesn't come into it. Along with the article is a diagram of the pitch with the starting players. They are Hegabo, Johnston, Illing Jr., Price, Mullenby, Mowat, Stiles, Campbell, Metham, Phillips and Griffiths. Underneath it says, substitutes, Wildsmith, Taylor, Bielik, Diatka, Wallace, Collier, Grant, Marja and Gilchrist. Derby County, 3-4-2-1 formation. Widell, Zetterstrom, Sanderson, Clark, Forsyth, Johnston, Travis, Adams, Elder, Brewster, Clark, Morris. Big match prediction, home win. There is also a photograph with the caption, Ayoun Hegabo scores for Albion during last month's Carabao Cup defeat against tomorrow's opponents Derby County and has an action shot from the game. The next photograph has the caption, Samuel Illing Jr. could start, and has a photograph of Samuel. The results of the match from Saturday, September 13th were West Bromwich 0, Derby 1. Market is great, and that's official, by Daniel Walton. The ribbon has been officially cut on West Bromwich's new High Street indoor market, to the delight of shoppers. West Bromwich shoppers celebrated the return of their beloved indoor market with a ceremony packed with local dignitaries. It has been open for business for a fortnight after a soft launch, and footfall is significantly up, with long queues in particular for Firkins the Bakery and its legendary pineapple tarts. Now the doors have officially been opened, with influencers, dignitaries, shoppers and the families of stallholders invited to a special VIP event. The new venue, well lit and fantastically decorated, certainly impressed the shopping public. It's great in here. I think it's brilliant, said Callie Ram from West Bromwich. It's in a really good location. It's good to see so many people coming in. It's much better than the last location. The new market replaced the previous indoor facility in King's Square, with many traders moving across to the new venue to continue their business. Amarjit Sindhu, owner of AS Textiles, moved after serving at the previous location for years. She said, It's really good in here. It's much nicer. I was at the old location for years, but this place is much nicer. It smells great and it's cleaner. It's a good move. Local shopkeeping legends such as Dave Griffiths of Dave's Pets, Miss Sindhu from AS Textiles and John Parek from Topaz Jewellery are coming back to the market, as well as Firkins, which returned to the town it had left years prior. Mr. Griffith said, "I think it's great in here so far. It's only just opened, but it already looks much nicer. Only time will tell. It's great to see so many smiling faces coming in. We have had the regular customers. It's going really well." Along with the article are a number of photographs. The first one has the caption, "Island Lounge and Marlon Amici," and shows Marlon holding a tray full of food. The next has the caption, "Balmeet Kaur, Bowles Beauty Studios," and shows Balmeet sat at a salon. The next one has the caption, "Dave Griffiths from Dave's Pets," and shows Dave in front of all the pet food. The next one has the caption, "Iced lemon buns at Firkins," and shows three members of staff holding a tray of iced lemon buns. The next photograph has the caption, "George Jackson shows off what's on offer at Jackson's Authentic Tastes," and shows George holding some food. The next photograph has the caption, "Mayor of Sandwell, Steve Mellier, and Market Manager, Jerry Ritchie," and shows the two men outside the store. The last photograph has the caption, "Steen Tiara has plenty to offer customers at West Brom Sports," and shows Steen holding a football. Comment. Nobody will be surprised at the findings of a new poll that asked NHS patients what their main priorities were. The answer has come loud and clear. We just want to see our GP as and when the need arises. We've probably all been there, holding on the phone for too long, suffering from an ailment that needs urgent attention, only to be offered an appointment in 3 weeks' time. Frankly, someone with a water infection or serious chest infection needs some help now, not at some date in the future. Those effectively turned away from GP surgeries are inevitably going to head to A&E, where they are likely to be sitting for hours waiting in turn to see a weary, overworked junior doctor. The current situation is stressful for patients and NHS staff alike, and politicians should take note of the survey by the Health Foundation. While Keir Starmer makes the issue of waiting times for routine operations his flagship NHS policy, those who use the service regularly simply want to get the basics right. That means seeing a GP when needed and tackling the long waits in A&E. Of course, none of this is easy, and we are about to enter into another season of winter pressures. But it matters, and the situation can only improve with real investment. We need more GPs, together with more flexible appointment times. We need better alternatives to A&E, so that those who need non-emergency help do not end up sitting in a hospital waiting room. The NHS and social care are huge challenges. If Labour is serious in tackling both, then it must seriously invest and listen to the priorities of patients.
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday, the 13th of September, Express and Star. Knowing if your hearing is failing and when you need hearing aids. Hearing loss often develops gradually. You might not notice it until you're regularly asking your partner to turn up the TV or repeat themselves. Despite the stigma that still surrounds hearing aids, they have the potential to significantly improve your quality of life. To help you better understand, we consulted Beverly Carter, registered hearing aid dispenser at the hearing shop. If you're beginning to think hearing aids might be right for you, here's everything you need to know. What are the signs of hearing loss? Carter says many people first notice they're turning the TV up louder than their family appreciates, or that they're struggling to follow conversations when there's background noise, something that used to be effortless. Other telltale signs include missing the phone ringing or the doorbell, feeling like people are mumbling more than they used to, or finding group conversations increasingly difficult to follow. When should you have your hearing checked? If family members are commenting on your hearing, if you're struggling to follow conversations in groups or noisy environments, or if you find yourself avoiding situations because of hearing difficulties, it's time for an evaluation, says Carter. What happens during a hearing evaluation? The audiologist will start with your medical history and discuss what you've noticed about your hearing. Then comes the testing. you'll sit in a soundproof booth wearing headphones while different tones and sounds are played at various volumes and frequencies, says Carter. What indicates hearing aids are needed? Most audiologists consider hearing aids when your hearing loss reaches about 25 to 30 decibels in the frequency important for speech understanding, notes Carter. Someone with a 25 decibel loss who's struggling at work might benefit enormously from hearing aids, while someone with a 40 decibel loss who's retired and lives a quiet lifestyle might choose to wait. What are some of the biggest misconceptions? A common misconception is that hearing aids will restore perfect hearing. They won't. They're aids, not cures, clarifies Carter. How do you choose the right one? Behind the ear, BTE models are the most powerful and easiest to handle, making them good for people with more significant hearing loss, explains Carter. Receiver in canal, RIC, aids offer a nice balance of performance and discretion. In the ear styles sit in your ear bowl and can be quite discreet, while completely in-canal aids are nearly invisible but may not be suitable for all types of hearing loss. Mason has wasted no time making his mark at Baggies. It is clear to see Ryan Mason has had a big impact on Albion with 3 wins from their opening 4 championship games. The Baggies have impressed in all 4 outings and in their EFL Cup clash with Derby County, despite going out on penalties. They return from the international break today to welcome Derby to the Hawthorns again. Albion will be hoping the break has not stunted momentum, as a victory could see them climb to the top of the championship. It has been a big turnaround since the end-of-season collapse that cost them a playoff spot, but what has changed? Johnny Drury looks at what is different about Mason's Baggies. If you look at Albion's last 2 regimes and the criticisms the 2 managers faced, they were very different. Under Carlos Corberan, Albion were solid and hard to beat and would win games narrowly. But when they couldn't find the net or create much and did ship the odd goal, there was a shift in the fan base. Towards the end of Corberan's reign, some fans were getting a bit fed up with the pragmatic approach. They wanted Albion to show more going forward. Move it on to Tony Mowbray, an attacking manager who wanted to see more from his side. They beat Portsmouth 5-1, and it looked as if they were going to see a free-flowing Albion. But even though they found the net more, the back door was wide open. In the end, it was his downfall. Under Mason, they are both sides, something we haven't seen for a while. The personnel speaks for itself and explains why Albion have looked so solid at the back. And going forward, although goals are not flowing, they are coming, and the chances are coming. Against Stoke, they had 3 really good openings, despite giving up more possession and having to defend for periods. They still look dangerous, while also being strong at the other end. It is an exciting combination. Counter-attacking quality. Under the previous regimes, it was about having more of the ball, certainly at home. With Mason, it is not always that way. Yes, there are games where Albion will dominate the ball, but some of their sharpest play this season has been on the break. Look at all 3 Wrexham goals, they sprung from counters. Against Stoke, the goal didn't come that way, but the other big chances did. Maybe Mason has seen a way Albion can be creative by playing that way, or maybe he sees his side as not having more than 1 string to their bow. One thing is for sure, that counter-attacking style is arguably better to watch than trying to pass a team off the park. There was something labelled at Corberan. Albion didn't get enough men forward to create. Under Mowbray, the balance was maybe wrong. With Mason, it seems to be right. Albion haven't been exposed. When they have gone forward, they have done it in numbers, and that is key when you play one up top, especially when that striker likes to drop in to receive the ball deeper. Police probe racially motivated attack. Police are investigating a racially motivated attack after a Sikh woman was reportedly raped in the Black Country and told, "You don't belong in this country." The victim, reported to be a British-born Sikh aged in her 20s, told officers a racist remark was made to her during the attack in the Tame Road area of Albury on Tuesday morning, which was reported to West Midlands Police just before 8:30 a.m. Police are looking for 2 white men in connection with the attack, which happened against a backdrop of anti-immigration protests and rising tensions around the use of the hotels for asylum seekers across the UK. The Sikh Federation UK said the perpetrators allegedly told the woman during the attack, which it said happened between 8 a.m. and 8:30 a.m, "You don't belong in this country, get out." The force said officers want to speak to anyone who may have seen two white men in the area. The first is described as having a shaved head and a heavy build and was wearing a dark sweatshirt with gloves on, and the second was reportedly wearing a grey top with a silver zip. Police said they are treating it as an isolated incident, but understand the anger and worry it has caused the community. Yesterday, a police cordon at the site, which had been in place at the edge of an area of grassland near an overbridge close to the M5 motorway, had been lifted. Chief Superintendent Kim Madill of Sandwell Police said, "You are working really hard to identify those responsible with CCTV, forensic and other inquiries well underway." Shop thief got off scot-free. A store owner has spoken of his frustration after two members of his staff chased and detained a man who stole a credit card machine, only for police officers to then let him go. Henry Carver, boss of Carver's Building Supplies in Wolverhampton, criticised the pitiful response from police after two members of his sales team went in pursuit of a man who stole the card machine from the counter of his store. Mr. Carver said he had since discovered contactless card machines were often used by organised crime gangs to steal card details from people in crowded public places such as trains or buses. The theft took place on Wednesday last week at 7:07 a.m. and was caught on the city centre store CCTV cameras. The man, dressed in a high visibility vest, ran for the exit. He was chased by two members of the sales team, who managed to apprehend him in the car park and bring him back into the store. Mr. Carver said the man was detained in the store for 30 to 40 minutes until police arrived, but he said that after a brief conversation, they let him go with a warning. An officer arrived, took his name and address, and said because he had no criminal record, he could go. He said, "He was not arrested or charged, and I'm still waiting my crime reference number. It was rather a pitiful response from the police. They didn't even interview him, ask him who he was or why he was doing this." Mr. Carver said he was particularly disappointed as the whole incident was captured on numerous cameras around the store. "I know that people stealing from shops is happening everywhere, but this was not like he had come in and stolen a tape measure," he said. "This was potentially part of a plan to steal tens of thousands of pounds from ordinary members of the public. The staff who detained him were not happy. They are honest people who work and pay their taxes, and they get fed up when this sort of thing happens." A West Midlands police spokesman said the card machine was handed back and it was established the man had no previous convictions. It was therefore mutually decided to resolve the matter through a community resolution. This included a ban from entering the premises. The aim of community relations is to reduce the likelihood of reoffending by encouraging offenders to face up to the impact of their behaviour.
This is Alison, reading a selection of articles from the Express and Star, dated Monday, 15th of September. Funding secured for redevelopment of leisure centre. The Football Foundation has agreed a grant towards the redevelopment of a popular Black Country leisure centre. Leisure United at Friar Park in Wednesbury is funded by the Premier League, the FA and Government's Football Foundation, as well as support funding from Sandwell Public Health. This investment at Friar Park secures the future of these facilities for the next 25 years, ensuring they continue to serve as pillars of sport and recreation for the local community. The redevelopment of Leisure United at Friar Park represents a new chapter in its legacy of community service. Thanks to collaborative efforts between the school's governors, the head teacher Mike Smith, and Leisure United, the facility's future has been safeguarded. Mike Smith, head teacher at Phoenix Collegiate, commented, "In 2022, myself and the school took a backlash from the community when the Pulse Soccer Centre closed with little notice. Very quickly, the school started this ongoing initiative with Leisure United, and it demonstrates the power of partnership in addressing community needs and fostering sustainable opportunities for sports and recreation. My thanks go to both the school's governing body and the team at Leisure United that has stayed strong in challenging times and has worked tirelessly in ensuring a community facility has now been secured for the next 25 years. The upgraded facilities will provide a welcoming, inclusive space where individuals of all ages and abilities can come together to enjoy football and other activities. The investment was also supported through an investment by Sandwell Public Health. Robert Sullivan, Chief Executive of the Football Foundation, said, "The Football Foundation is working closely with our partners, the Premier League, the FA and government, to transform the quality of grassroots facilities in England by delivering projects like this." MP says she is hopeful justice will be done in racist rape case. West Bromwich MP Sarah Coombs has called for justice to run its course as detectives investigate a report of a racially aggravated rape of a Sikh woman in Oldbury. Miss Coombs took to X to appeal for help for the victim and for justice to take its course after the woman, in her 20s, was attacked at a grassy area off Tame Road at about 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday. "It's absolutely horrible to hear about this racially aggravated sexual assault in Oldbury," the MP said. "This type of violence and hatred has no place in our society. I hope justice is found and the victim gets the help needed. Detectives are looking for two white men in connection with the attack. Police revealed during the attack, the victim was told, 'You don't belong in this country.' One of them is described as having a shaved head and a heavy build, and was wearing a dark sweatshirt with gloves on. And the second was reportedly wearing a grey top with a silver zip. Police say they are treating it as an isolated incident, but understand the anger and worry it has caused the community. The attack happened against a backdrop of anti-immigration protests and rising tensions around the use of hotels for asylum seekers across the UK. Anyone with information should phone police on 101, quoting log 798 of September the 9th. NHS Trust to be investigated in maternity services review. Sandwell and West Birmingham hospitals are being included in national probe. The Sandwell and West Birmingham hospitals NHS Trust is among 14 English trusts that will be looked at as part of a national review of maternity and neonatal services. The trust has been confirmed as one of the trusts that will be examined by Baroness Valerie Amos's investigation into England's maternity and neonatal services. Baroness Amos was announced last month as leading an independent investigation into English maternity services over government concerns about systemic problems in maternity and neonatal care dating back over 15 years. At the time, it was revealed that 10 trusts across the country would be examined, with intentions to provide national recommendations for improvements by December. It has now been confirmed that 14 trusts will be part of the review, including Sandwell and West Birmingham. The Department of Health and Social Care, DHSC, said that families affected by maternity failures across the country had provided input into the draft terms of reference for Baroness Amos's investigation. Outlining the ambitions for the latest reviews, Baroness Amos said, "It is vital that the voices of mothers and families are at the heart of this investigation from the very beginning. Their experiences, including those of fathers and non-birthing partners, will guide our work and shape the national recommendations we will publish. We will pay particular attention to the inequalities faced by Black and Asian women and by families from marginalised groups, whose voices have too often been overlooked. Our aims are to ensure the lived experiences of affected families are fully heard, to conduct and publish 14 local investigations of maternity and neonatal services, and to develop recommendations informed by these that will drive improvements across maternity and neonatal services nationwide." DHSC said the terms of reference for the investigations have been developed to focus on understanding the experiences of affected women and families, identifying lessons learned, and driving the improvements needed to ensure high quality and safe maternity and neonatal care across England. The investigation was announced in June 2025 by Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Streeting over concerns about systemic problems in maternity and neonatal care dating back over 15 years. He said, "Bereaved families have shown extraordinary courage in coming forward to help inform this rapid national investigation alongside Baroness Amos. What they have experienced is devastating, and their strength will help protect other families from enduring what they have been through. I know that NHS maternity and neonatal workers want the best for these mothers and babies, and that the vast majority of births are safe and without incident. But I cannot turn a blind eye to failures in the system. Every single preventable tragedy is one too many. Harmed and bereaved families will be right at the heart of this investigation to ensure no one has to suffer like this again. Not too hot, not too cold. Meg learns porridge secrets. One of the world's quirkiest food contests is set to return to the Scottish Highlands next month, and former Great British Bake Off star Nikki Laceby is one of the competitors. Every year, in a community hall of a small Scottish village, passionate competitors from around the globe take part in the world's annual porridge-making championship, the Golden Spurtle. This year, 30 competitors will descend on the village of Carbridge, which, for the rest of the year, is home to little else than a couple of cafes, a golf course, a spa, and a population of around 700 people. The long list of oat lovers deemed worthy to take part in this quirky competition, now in its 32nd year, includes competitors from 14 nations, among them Pakistan, Australia, the USA, Finland, and the Philippines. But this year, on October the 4th, a familiar face from closer to home will be making the trek up north, with former Great British Bake Off contestant Nikki Laceby having been given the honour of taking part. Nikki, who is originally from Dundee, now lives near Albrighton with her husband and two Cocker Spaniels, Bracken and Haggis, and became somewhat of a Great British Bake Off icon with her beaver-shaped showstopper cake named Norman in 2023. When, 2 weeks ago, I suggested Nikki might teach me the secrets of great porridge making, I didn't think there was a chance I'd pull it off. So no one was more surprised than I when she not only agreed, but also enthusiastically welcomed me into her beautiful home and kitchen this week. In the 2 years since appearing in the Great British Bake Off tent, Nikki has been kept busy, working alongside food companies, giving talks, writing recipes, and more recently, baking wedding cakes. But for the last few weeks, her next challenge has kept her pretty occupied in the kitchen. "I'm thrilled. I love it. I absolutely love it," she said, effusive at the mention of the upcoming competition, which she's been following for several years. "What a quirky, bizarre, and really cool thing to be part of. I'm making porridge almost every day. It's taking my husband back to when I was in the tent and churning stuff out until 2 in the morning. The Golden Spurtle, named after the Scottish stirring stick, gives competitors just half an hour to prepare 2 pints of traditional porridge, using just oatmeal, water and salt, and a specialty porridge dish where entrants can unleash their creativity. While Nikki kept stum over her plans, previous specialty porridge category winners have taken home the trophy with dishes that include arancini and sweet and savoury porridge noodles. There's a long list of rules and requirements, including that the traditional porridge must be made with untreated oatmeal only, not with the rolled oats gathering dust in most of our kitchen cupboards. Competitors must bring their own everything: oatmeal, salt, pots, pans, and of course, spurtles. Nikki's oatmeal is coming with her from Shropshire, proudly provided by Caroline Waterhouse of Pym Hill Farm near Shrewsbury, who might be more excited about the competition than the competitor. "I was really very excited when Nikki phoned me. It's the Golden Spurtle, the zenith of porridge making," Caroline said. "It couldn't be more off the wall if it tried. It's just so wholesome." Nikki added, "I think it's about having fun and being part of something that's heartwarming. There's no malice in it. It's a feel-good competition." Now to her technique, as experienced by me, an avid Pure Vibes porridge maker. According to Nikki, perfect porridge requires 25 grams per person of oatmeal with around 220 millilitres of water. Bring it to a boil and keep stirring it, preferably with a spurtle, clockwise, because of something to do with the devil. Originating in the 15th century, a spurtle, or spurtel, spurtil, or spirtil, is like a thin rolling pin with at least one tapered end, which apparently avoids the pesky problem of porridge clumping. Brandishing the spurtle, similar to one she took to and mysteriously lost in the Great British Bake Off tent, Nikki explained, "Basically it's a stick. Supposedly it doesn't allow the porridge to stick to the pot as much and gets into all the corners. It's a much wetter experience of porridge making than I'm used to at home, where I chuck some rolled oats in a pan and add water until it's slightly damper than an unbaked cake. I like the chew." Nikki's reduces slowly, taking almost 25 minutes to form a skin on top that suggests it's just right. Hers is a technique formed as the daughter of two passionate porridge makers, with both her mum and dad becoming really vocal during Nikki's competition prep. My mum and dad have their own golden spurtle. They have competitions. They both make it completely differently. Mine is a combination of both, she added. A good pinch of salt is added for each serving while the porridge is cooking, with more added later to taste if necessary. Regarding toppings, Nikki prefers a sweet topping generally, and prepared for us a combination of cinnamon-baked apple chunks, chopped pecans, and Greek yogurt. In a flourish worthy of the great white tent, she added an edible flower for decoration, and it was perfection. Wholesome, hearty, creamy, nutty goodness, worthy of a golden, nay, a diamond spurtle. An Australian documentary filmed around the 2023 Golden Spurtle competition was released in the UK this week and is being shown in cinemas around the country. The 32nd Golden Spurtle competition will be taking place on October the 3rd and will be streamed live around the world. Society opens free spaces for the community. West Brom Building Society has opened its doors to the public with the launch of its first ever community spaces across five of its branches in its heartlands. The rooms offer local groups and customers a free space to meet and connect with each other. The spaces, which have launched in branches at Tipton, Shrewsbury, King Standing, Perry Bar and Bearwood, are available for community groups, clubs and societies and small businesses to host meetings, activities and events. It's the first time the Building Society has opened any dedicated spaces for the community and is part of its wider commitment to bringing the community into its branches. Harriet Yates, Tipton branch manager at the West Brom, said, "It's so important to have community spaces like this, especially at a time when some people feel disconnected in the areas they live in. These rooms give us the chance to help build everyday connections with our community by providing local groups with a place to come together. We're excited to see how they'll make them their own." The community spaces can be booked free of charge inside the branches.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. And this week's round, it's general knowledge. Question 1. The collective noun for which group of animals is called an embarrassment? Question 2. In which book of the Bible does the legend of the Tower of Babel appear? Question 3. Which royal family member's titles include the Earl of Forfar? Question 4. HR is the International Vehicle Registration License Plate for which country? Question 5. Faye Ray, Jessica Lange and Naomi Watts have all been captured by which film monster? Question 6. On the Fahrenheit scale, water boils at what temperature? Question 7. Which high street retailer was founded by Richard Tomkins in 1972? Question 8. In which European country is the headquarters of the airline Air Explore? Question 9. The Russian alphabet consists of how many letters? And question 10. Which is the oldest of the USA's Ivy League universities? How's your general knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the general knowledge round. Question 1. The collective noun for which group of animals is called an embarrassment? Pandas. Question 2. In which book of the Bible does the legend of the Tower of Babel appear? Genesis. Question 3. Which royal family member's titles include the Earl of Forfar? Prince Edward. Question 4. HR is the International Vehicle Registration License Plate for which country? Croatia. Question 5. Faye Ray, Jessica Lang and Naomi Watts have all been captured by which film monster? King Kong. Question 6. On the Fahrenheit scale, water boils at what temperature? 212 degrees. Question 7. Which high street retailer was founded by Richard Tomkins in 1972? Argos. Question 8. In which European country is the headquarters of the airline Air Explore? Slovakia. Question 9. The Russian alphabet consists of how many letters? 33. And question 10. Which is the oldest of the USA's Ivy League universities? Harvard. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann and I'll be back next time. Bye.
TNS Soundings.
Here's a piece of history about a life-changing sight loss service that actually started in Rotherham in South Yorkshire and has just celebrated its 30th anniversary. They are eye care liaison officers employed by the Royal National Institute for the Blind in partnership with the National Health Service to provide emotional and practical support. There are now 190 officers across the country, but the RNIB's first was Kevin Hewish, employed in Rotherham from 1994. Kevin said, "When we started the service 30 years ago, the NHS was a very different place. There was some resistance from certain quarters, but as soon as we started meeting the service's users, we found out what they wanted and what they needed, and we were building this new service. None of us were quite sure how it would be for people with sight loss who shaped the service. The Rotherham service is now based at a community centre in Greensborough Road, Rotherham. Stevie Johnson was orthopedist at the clinic in 1994 and was so impressed by the service that she ended up working for the RNIB and is now their charity clinical lead. She says, "Very quickly we realised how this service was going to benefit people with eye conditions and sight loss. It meant people with eye conditions could be made aware of all the support and organisations that were available to them that they might not have otherwise known about." The current officer, Gabrielle Bauer, was inspired to become an eye care officer after her husband, Matt Bauer, who has sight loss, previously held the role. She said, "The role I play here in the clinic at Rotherham is huge. Every day I make sure I'm visible for patients who need support, such as applying for a certificate of vision impairment, applying for benefits, or getting hold of a magnifier. One patient, Jean Derrick, who is 91, says, 'I was getting so upset because I felt I was isolated and no one seemed to know how to help me. But then Gabrielle contacted me and said she'd take care of everything. I just started crying with relief.' Gabrielle helped Jean apply for tax reductions, benefits and discounted TV license and referred to her and got her home visits. You can call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999.
TNS Soundings.
Just a quick trip down the cut now before we move on to the TV and radio listings.
OK, folks, well, we've come down onto the canal. Now, this is the Worsell Canal, which has come down from Greets Green, from the Birmingham Level main line, which we saw last week. And it's come down what's called Riders Green Locks, and there are a set of eight locks. And the canal drops from 453 feet above sea level to 408 feet here on the lower level, which is the Worsell Canal level. Now, we're standing by the bottom lock, which is a bit separated from the other seven. It's the other seven on the other side of the main road. So this is the bottom lock of the Riders Green flight. And we've also just passed over another aqueduct where the River Tame goes underneath the canal. And although we can't see it because it involves quite a dangerous climb down to see it, the aqueduct is a beautiful three-arched bridge in blue brick. But you can just see the wall of it there, the parapet wall that we've just come past. So the River Tame is going underneath the canal. And just here as well, in front of us, there used to be a railway bridge which used to take the line from Great Bridge across to Swan Village, which carried trains from Dudley into Birmingham Snow Hill. But that finished in 1964. Was that Beeching? It was, yeah. So that was Dr. Beeching responsible for that. So that finished in 1964, and hopefully later this year, or probably more like next year, we're going to get the metro opening to Dudley. So at last, after all that time, work that out, what's that, 60 years, you're going to be able to catch a tram from Dudley to Birmingham again. It's only taken 60 years to get it back. When the new line to Dudley opens, it'll come down to Wensbury and join onto that line, and then it'll turn right to go into Birmingham and turn left to go into Wolverhampton. So I think the plan is for trams to alternate from Dudley to through to Birmingham and through to Wolverhampton. So that should be pretty good when it starts, because it'll also connect with the new Dudley bus station that's being built now as well.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the audio described television programmes for the week beginning Saturday, 20th of September, 2025, written by John and read by Chris. Starting with comedy on Saturday the 20th, Channel 4 has Everybody Loves Raymond at 8 a.m, followed by Frasier at 9:25, and then The Simpsons at 10:25. That's assuming you like an early start. Rick Stein is in Cornwall at 11:30 on BBC One. The afternoon film on BBC Two at 1 p.m. is The Railway Children, the classic film from 1970 starring Jenny Agutter. Also at 1, but on BBC One, is coverage of the Athletics World Championships live from Japan. It's not audio described, but commentary from Steve Cran, Colin Jackson and Paula Radcliffe will help you understand the event. Strictly Come Dancing returns with its launch show at 6:40 on BBC One. The celebrities get paired with their professional dancers. The story of how Britain gave railways to the world is told in Britain's Railway Empire in Colour on Channel 4 at 8. This is followed by an action thriller. A former Special Forces operative hopes to end the war between humans and artificial intelligence by destroying the architect of the enemy machines. But will he succeed? Find out in The Creator on Channel 4 at 9. Ian goes on his most frightening heart mission yet in tonight's Casualty on BBC One at 9:20. Although not audio described, Match of the Day returns to BBC One at 10:30. Hopefully the commentary will help you understand what's happening on the field. On to Sunday the 21st. More politicians are put under the spotlight on BBC One at 9 a.m.
in Sunday with Laura Koonsberg. At 11 a.m. on BBC One follows the second day at the World Athletics Championships from Japan. There are three episodes of The Simpsons on Channel 4, starting at 1 o'clock, 1:25 and 1:55. The afternoon film on ITV One takes us to the magical world of Hogwarts, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets is on at 3:25. What's it like to live on the eastern borders of Europe? Katia Adler finds out what it's like living next door to Putin on BBC Two at 7:10. The documentary series Educating Yorkshire continues on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Sir David Attenborough narrates The Search of the Coelacanth in this one-off documentary. A team using submersibles goes to great depths to find this primeval fish, often described as a living fossil. Find out how they get on in Deep Ocean, Kingdom of the Coelacanth, at 8:10 on BBC Two. If you like sport, Freddie Flintoff is organising amateur cricket teams, but in Manchester is facing dwindling numbers, whereas in Blackpool, the girls' team play their first match against a prestigious boarding school. Will they win? Find out in Field of Dreams at 8:15 on BBC One. William and Harold pursue costly alliances against the advice of their womenfolk. King and Conqueror continues on BBC One at 9:15. Rob and Rylan continue their passage to India at 9 on BBC Two. And in Part 10, players with true intentions are revealed in The Inheritance on Channel 4 at 9. Now a look at programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following are on BBC One. Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Clean It, Fix It at 2 p.m, but not Friday. Robson Green's Weekend Escapes at 2:30, but not Friday. Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. On other channels, Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV One at 2. Downton Abbey Series 1 on ITV 3 at 3:30. Earth on BBC Two at 4:15. Great Railway Journeys on BBC Two at 6:30. Two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV3 starting at 5:50. The soaps are on their usual channels at their usual times. Back to the weekdays, starting with Monday the 22nd. It's brain-teasing time of the week with Mastermind and University Challenge on BBC2 at 7:30 and 8:30 respectively. Jamie concludes his culinary skills by incorporating more white fish into his diet. Jamie, Eat Yourself Healthy on Channel 4 at 8. Rhea is a fugitive and on the run. Fran discovers evidence which will clear her. The Guest comes to a conclusion at 9 on BBC One. We've all experienced COVID, but the thinking is there could be another pandemic at some time. Chris Van Tulleken investigates the hunt for the pathogen that could trigger the next pandemic and the cutting-edge science developed to tackle it. Disease X, Hunting the Next Pandemic on BBC Two at 9. The Inheritance reaches its penultimate episode where the players are forced to adapt their strategies, Channel 4 at 9. John, who is full of regret over his friendship with Tommy, tries to share his suspicions with Fiona. Coldwater is on ITV1 at 9. On to Tuesday the 23rd. Stacey and Joe is all about their family this week. How they get on is on BBC1 at 8. Michael visits Derby and the largest ever collection of locomotives in one place. Michael Portillo's 200 Years of Railways on BBC Two at 8. Back to school week starts with the lunchbox favourite Flapjacks, culminating in a school fete showstopper. The Great British Bake Off is on Channel 4 at 8. A return to the drama set in a Manchester school starts a new series tonight. New teacher Darius causes a stir in the staff room, and Jack Rimmer tackles his first day as school counsellor. Waterloo Road on BBC One at 9. Part 2 is on BBC One after the news at 10:40. Michael Palin visits a cluster of coral islands in the Caribbean Sea and sees how Venezuela's political situation has devastated the area's tourism industry. Michael Palin in Venezuela is on Channel 5 at 9. The deceased reveals one last ruthless twist in the final of The Inheritance on Channel 4 at 9:15. Now, Wednesday the 24th. MasterChef sends four finalists to Greece and Margi Farm, which supplies produce for some of the finest restaurants in Athens, where they make a delicious lunch for the locals, including the workers of Margi Farm. MasterChef on BBC One at 8. There's a novel take on US President Trump's second term in office, recutting news clips as drama to retell his story. The Donald Trump Show is on Channel 4 at 9. The Honeymooners are elated as boats bring their friends and family from the other side of the world, but will their loved ones approve of their new partners? Stranded on Honeymoon Island is on BBC One at 9. There's a third choice at 9, based on a true story. We follow journalist Nick Davis as he receives a tip-off about a phone hacking at Rupert Murdoch's News of the World. The Hack, a new series on ITV One at 9. When a human torso is found at a Salford beauty spot, a murder inquiry begins. How they get on is revealed in Cracking the Case, The Torso Wrapped in Plastic, on BBC Two at 10. Thursday the 25th. The final four are asked to put a twist on a selection of classic dishes, including beef Wellington. The three successful contestants will head for the kitchens at the Dorchester. MasterChef is on BBC One at 8. Helen is blindsided by a front page article about her mental health. Meanwhile, she focuses on a report about the closure of mental health institutions across the country. The newsreader is on BBC Two at 9. It's the penultimate part where the islanders have a full moon party, and then the honeymooners leave the beaches and spend time apart to contemplate their relationships. Stranded on Honeymoon Island is on BBC One at 9. Nikki and Davina meet with two parents searching for their children they last saw as babies. Longless Family is on ITV One at 9. There's a return to Darabi tonight. James is struggling with a wild, chaotic Siegfried, and when Tristan returns from war, he is shocked at the shift in his brother. All Creatures Great and Small is on Channel 5 at 9. Journalist Callum Leslie, psychiatrist Dr. Soham Das, and former detective Rebecca Mason delve into a police investigation of a series of seemingly unrelated criminal events. 5 years later, one crucial piece of evidence joins them all together. Cracking the Case, the Heist, the Hit, and the Hunt is on BBC Two at 10. How about ending the day with a classic biographical drama? Oscar comes to Krakow with the idea of using cheap Jewish labour, but soon finds it useful to protect his workers. Schindler's List is on BBC Two at 11. And finally, Friday the 26th. A murder at the set of a bawdy film needs the sister's assistance despite her being incapacitated with a leg injury. Sister Boniface Mysteries on BBC One at 2 p.m. It's the final, and there's a nail-biting end, with the finalists having 3 hours to prove they are the best amateur cook in the country. MasterChef is on BBC One at 8. Joel and Prue help Joe Brand and Tom Allen recall events in Back to School Week. The Great British Bake Off Extra Slice is on Channel 4 at 8. Back in civilization, Davina pays a surprise visit to reveal that they will all face one final flare-out. Will they choose to commit to each other in the real world? Stranded on Honeymoon Island, the final flare on BBC One at 9. Dale is falling apart and Helen's relationship with Bill deteriorates. The newsreader reaches its conclusion at 9 on BBC Two. An actor searches for their perfect final words and the late great novelist E.M. Forster makes a surprise appearance in The Wrong Century. Mitchell and Webb Are Not Helping is on Channel 4 at 10. You could end the week with an action spy thriller. Ethan Hunt is on the trail of his rogue former colleague Sean Ambrose, following the theft of a synthetic virus capable of wiping out the world's population. Mission Impossible 2 is on ITV1 at 10:45. We hope you find something of interest in this week's suggestions.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, September 20th. And The Flight of Eric Strap is a poignant comedy drama by Ronnie Smith, starring Stratford Johns as blind gangster Bottles Doon, who is trying to hunt down gambler Eric Strap, played by George Cole. Broadcast in honour of the centenary of John's birth, it's Radio 4 Extra, The Flight of Eric Strap, 6 a.m. Saturday morning, or if you prefer, 5 p.m. in the afternoon. More drama on Radio 4, the concluding episode of The Magic Mountain, adapted from Thomas Mann's 1924 novel, Der Zonderberg. Why, when young Hugh Casthorpe visits a sanatorium in the mountains, does he find that he cannot leave? Radio 4, 3 p.m. for The Magic Mountain. Opera on 3 is Mozart's La Clemenza di Tito, sung in Italian. It tells the story of how Vitellia, daughter of deposed Roman Emperor Vitellius, plots vengeance against her father's usurper, the Emperor Titus. Opera on 3, 6 p.m. on Radio 3. And lastly for Saturday comes Sir Alex Ferguson, Made in Govan. Sir Alex and BBC radio presenter Mike Sweeney go back a long way. They used to play football together, bonded over their love of music from the 1960s. And here they talk about Sir Alex as a young man from Govan on the Clyde and the influences that shaped his extraordinary football career. Sir Alex Ferguson, Made in Govan, Radio 4, 8 o'clock, Saturday night. Sunday, September 21st. And Kirsty Walk reunites those involved in the 1999 reform of the House of Lords in this week's The Reunion, 10 a.m, Radio 4. Scotland Wants You looks at Scottish attitudes to immigration. Does the country's reputation for openness align with current attitudes? And does this image mask deeper ambivalence? Nick Eardley investigates Scotland Wants You, 1:30, Radio 4, Sunday afternoon. For a soundscape exploring the impact of 200 years of railways on the modern world, incorporating archive materials and contemporary voices, poet Katrina Porteous walks an old passenger route, revealing her family's connections to County Durham's mines and railways. How Trains Shrank Time and Space, 7:15, Sunday night, Radio 4. On to programmes then that are broadcast each day, each weekday, at the same time. Same time, same radio station, Monday to Friday. Book of the Week is A History of England in 25 Poems. Catherine Clarke reads from her book which explores the ways in which poetry has shaped English identity. 11:45 every morning on Radio 4 for Book of the Week. Caroline Steele and producer Florian Bohr go in search for a place on Earth untouched by humans. And in the first episode, with the help of NASA's scientific visualization team, explore maps that reveal humanity's astonishing global footprint. Looking for No Man's Land, Radio 4, every day this week, 1:45. Now, this one's inspired by a 1950s true story. Penelope Keith stars as wealthy Sussex resident Miss Bessemer, who campaigns to halt the closure of her local railway. Miss Bessemer saves the train a choice of times each weekday on Radio 4 Extra at 3:45 in the afternoon or 9:45 at night. This week, Composer of the Week is Spanish composer Joaquin Rodrigo, 1901 to 1999. He lost his eyesight at just 3 years due to diphtheria, and he's responsible for one of the most instantly recognisable works for classical guitar, the Concerto d'Aranjou, or Orange Juice. Composer of the Week, 4 o'clock, every weekday, Radio 3. In the essay this week, psychotherapist and author Philippa Perry explores the potential power of musical therapy. She meets Donald Weatherick, who works with adults experiencing the most serious mental health conditions. The essay, Music Heals, 9:45. All week, Radio 3. Book of Bedtime is Philip Roth's 2004 modern classic, The Plot Against America. 10:45 every night on Radio 4. And 5 programmes from the Great Live series, starting with entertainer Bruce Forsyth. 11:30 p.m. every night on Radio 4 all week. Let's go back to the radio highlights individually for each day. Monday, September 22nd, and the drama Mrs. Bridge continues. Mr. and Mrs. Bridge find that Europe is very different from Kansas City, following memorable experiences in London, Paris and Rome. Mrs. Bridge, 2:45, Radio 4, Monday afternoon. And the final episode of this series of Just a Minute has Julian Clary, Rachel Paris, Patterson Joseph and Paul Merton trying to speak for 60 seconds on topics including Paddington Bear and shoulder pads. 6:30 for Just a Minute, Radio 4. Tuesday, September 23rd. And Sophia Gaylor-Smith concludes her university's challenge series by asking, what is the value of a degree? With AI, financial pressures and the nightmare job market, is it still worth getting one? Or are there alternatives? 9:30 Tuesday morning, Radio 4. Newly pregnant Carrie tries to maintain her calm when in an ambulance control room she has to work with an AI system that doesn't always understand. Lifelines is the drama on Radio 4 at 2:15 and it continues Wednesday at the same time. Back to Tuesday, History Heroes. This week shines a light on the ways in which actor Katharine Hepburn challenged the conventions of Hollywood's studio system. History Heroes, 3 o'clock, Radio 4. File on 4 goes this week inside the world of migrant hotels and provides a unique insight into a story that is dominating the news headlines. File on 4 investigates, 8 o'clock, Radio 4 on Tuesday. And as it is a Tuesday, in touch with Peter White, the latest for the blind and partially sighted, 8:40 p.m, Radio 4. Wednesday, September 24th, and nearly 40 years after Paul Simon's Graceland album, with its joyful Black South Africa music and Simon's lyricism, how is it viewed today when issues of cultural boycotts, cultural appropriation and cancel culture are so prevalent? Paul Simon's Political Storm, 9:30, Wednesday morning, Radio 4. And St Paul's Church in Knightsbridge in London is the venue for Radio 3 in concert that includes music by Elgar, Holst and Britten, plus the world premiere of Elemental, a work for choir, harp and percussion by Lancashire-born composer John Pickard and dedicated to the BBC singers. Radio 3 in concert, 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday night on Radio 3. Thursday, September 25th. And Love Across the Ages tackles love between two Muslim men from Iran in 1815 through to modern-day Bradford. Danyal and Saif meet in a bookshop in Bradford and both are drawn to a book of poetry by Abu Nawas. But only one copy is left. Who will be the lucky owner? Love Across the Ages is the drama on Radio 4 at 2:15 on Thursday afternoon. And tucked away in a wooded valley on the outskirts of Bristol is a woodland nature reserve, Snuff Mills. Helen Mark discovers what lies beneath the trees, a now peaceful place with a history of heavy industry and where stone quarrying has left behind a stunning playground for climbers. But where does the name Snuff Mills come from, and is it really the most haunted place in Bristol? You can find out more. Open Country, Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Thursday afternoon. Finally, Friday, September 26th. and it's the final episode of Limelight, Mother Cover. Gwen has to do one final task in this drama on Radio 4, but just as she thinks things are over, she realises she's in more danger than ever. Limelight, Mother Cover, 2:15, Radio 4. Friday night is, of course, Music Night, you got it, and it comes live from London's Royal Festival Hall with the BBC Concert Orchestra playing music from TV period dramas including Bridgerton, Downton Abbey, Pride and Prejudice, Sanderton and others. The concert starts 7:30pm, Radio 3. And finally, at 1am, so slightly into Saturday morning, Julie Andrews at the BBC, as Radio 2 celebrates her life and career via a wealth of BBC archive material. 90 years old next week, you can hear her interviews with, among others, Nikki Campbell, Sue Lawley and Michael Parkinson. Subjects include her early life in London, discovery of her singing voice aged 12, personal and professional anecdotes involving Hattie Jakes, Tony Hancock, Harry Secombe, Richard Burton, Peter Sellers, Dudley Moore. It's a list of who's who. As I said, it does start at 1am Saturday morning on Radio 2. It could well be worth staying up for, or I'm sure you can track it down on BBC Sounds. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday, the 16th of September. Baggies make a winning start at their new home. Albion Women christened their new Alexander Stadium home with a stoppage time winner to beat Stoke. Phoebe Warner scored with just seconds remaining as the Baggies completed a thrilling comeback to claim a 2-1 win in front of watching owner Shailen Patel. Delphi Cole had fired the visitors in front from the penalty spot. Izzy Green was adjudged to have felled Evie Priestley. But substitute Fran Orthodontou volleyed the post level with 17 minutes remaining before Warner fired home range 5 minutes into stoppage time to earn the Baggies a second National League Northern Premier win of the season. The win moved Albion up to fifth in the table, while Wolves sit second after beating Middlesbrough 2-0 for their third victory in a row. Beth Merrick scored both goals inside the opening 10 minutes and Wolves trail leaders Burnley on goal difference, with the latter having claimed a 2-1 win at Sporting Khalsa. Claudia Walker and Millie Ravening struck early for the visitors, and though Megan Kane pulled one back, the home side could not find a leveller. Villa boss Natalia Arroyo urged the players to focus on the bigger picture after the 3-1 home defeat to WSL champions Chelsea. The hosts performed well, particularly in the first half, where Ebony Salmon netted an excellent equaliser after Aggie Beaver-Jones had broken the deadlock. Salmon was then denied a second by goalkeeper Hannah Hampton. But Chelsea's strength in depth told in the second period, with Sam Kerr scoring her first appearance for 20 months to seal the win in stoppage time after Missy Bokern's own goal and restored the visiting team's advantage. "We were so close to finding the 2-2 until the 92nd, 93rd minute," said Arroyo. "I'm so proud of our performance, but I know it's about winning and we are not getting anything from this good performance. But in the bigger picture, if we keep working and believing as we are doing, we will get better things." Niamh Deasy scored the only goal as Kidderminster Harriers hedged past Stourbridge in a National League Division 1 derby clash. Goals from Amy Rollison, Mia Fellows and Sonny Najib earned Warsaw a 3-0 win at Rugby Town in their first West Midlands League match of the season. Campaigners hail new law after Hillsborough. West Midlands police implicated in alleged inquiry cover-up. This article is by Annie Fox. The long-awaited introduction of a so-called Hillsborough law has been hailed as a victory for campaigners who must not be watered down. The Public Office Accountability Bill will be introduced to Parliament today to begin the journey towards becoming law. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer had previously pledged to bring in the law by the 36th anniversary of the tragedy, which was on April the 15th, but Downing Street then said more time was needed to redraft it. Some campaigners had raised fears the bill's contents had been diluted and would not include a legal duty of candour. But the government has confirmed a new professional and legal duty of candour will be part of the bill, meaning public officials must act with honesty and integrity at all times and could face criminal sanctions if they breach it. It comes after officers at West Midlands Police were implicated in a potential cover-up of evidence as the inquiry into the disaster unfolded. Margaret Aspinall, whose son James, 18, died at Hillsborough, said she's hopeful the new law will mean no one will ever have to suffer like we did. The disaster in 1989 led to the deaths of 97 football fans during the FA Cup semi-final between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest at the football ground in Sheffield. The government said the new legislation will end the culture of cover-ups and learn lessons from wider disasters, including the Grenfell Tower fire and the Post Office Horizon affected blood scandals. A spokesperson for the Hillsborough Law Now campaign warned the bill must not be weakened during its passage through Parliament and called on the government to be brave and ignore the vested interests of those who might attempt to water it down. They said this landmark bill introduced today, if passed and implemented in full, will lead to massive cultural change and prevent the cover-ups and institutional defensiveness that has persevered across so many disasters and scandals. It is only the full implementation of this bill that will achieve that, and the government will need to be brave and ignore the vested interests that will attempt to water it down as it progresses through Parliament. Some of families and campaigners were expected to attend Downing Street today to mark the bill's introduction. Ms Aspinall said, "It's been a long journey to get here. I'm so grateful to the Prime Minister for fulfilling his promise to me." Sir Keir praised Ms Aspinall's courage and the strength of all the Hillsborough families and survivors in their long campaign for justice. He said the new legislation can change the balance of power to ensure the state can never hide from the people it is supposed to serve. He added, "Make no mistake, this is a law for the 97, but it is also a law for the sub-postmasters who suffered because of the Horizon scandal, the victims of the infected blood and those who died in the terrible Grenfell Tower fire. This is a change only this government can deliver." One of the bill's architects, Elkin Abrahamson, of law firm Brugel Jackson Canton, said there is still some way to go before the bill becomes law, but said today marked a monumental step forward. West Midlands Police and South Yorkshire Police both paid out compensation to more than 600 people affected by the cover-up following the Hillsborough disaster. When the settlements were revealed in 2021, West Midlands Police said it deeply regretted the harm and distress caused to the Hillsborough families. The force was brought in to investigate the actions of South Yorkshire officers following the disaster at Sheffield Wednesday's ground, but it was later accused of malpractices and failures that had been subject to a long-running investigation by the Independent Office of Police Conduct. Man and woman facing jail term after shots were fired at a house. A man and woman are facing jail after shots were fired at a house in Albury early this year. In the early hours of February the 17th, a black Hyundai drove on Vicarage Street multiple times before coming to a stop outside an address. The driver then exited the vehicle and fired a shotgun twice at the living room and bedroom windows of the property before fleeing the scene. Luckily, no one was injured. Following further inquiries, West Midland Police then arrested Seema Khan and Hassan Hussein at their home address in the West Midlands. During a search of Khan's address, police found a self-loading pistol with live ammunition hidden in a handbag underneath her bed. Although forensic examination showed the gun recovered was not used in the shooting, Khan of Navigation Road, Birmingham, was arrested on suspicion of assisting an offender and possession of a firearm that was consequently charged. Hussein of Edgbaston Road, Birmingham, was charged with possession of a firearm with intent to endanger life. They both denied the offences at an earlier hearing, but were found guilty following a trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court. They are due to be sentenced on the 31st of October. Detective Sergeant Lucy Mooney from West Midland Police's Major Crime Unit said, "It's miraculous no one was injured as a result of the dangerous actions of Hussein. This was a planned attack. Hussein had set up his mode of transport away from the scene and surveyed the area before firing the shotgun." This is an additional item from Trevor with another item from the Express and Star tonight. This is about my local butcher shop, which has been owned by a really good family friend of mine for over 30 years who is closing this weekend. Landmark West Bromwich butcher shop that has served generations of black country folk to close its doors. Here's why. A West Bromwich Albion supporting butcher will close the doors on his black country store later after generations of service. Here's why. Osborne's the Butchers, located on Walsall Road in Stonecross, West Bromwich, will shut on Saturday the 27th of September. 27 years after West Brom supporting owner David Osborne took over the business from former boss Jack Hughes. Having begun working for the Hughes family in May 1982, David explained why the final day of trading will be such an emotional one for him, having seen generations of customers flock to his store across five decades. "We don't have to close down, but everything has come at the right time for it to happen," the 59-year-old father of three explained. "The lease on the shop is up. And they wanted me to sign a 10-year lease with a get-out clause after five. And as I'm nearly 60, I don't want to be here until I'm 65. The price of everything is a big thing too. Not the main reason, but it all contributes towards the decision. It's been my life for over 40 years, but now I think the time is right for me to move on and try something different. I know it'll be an emotional day because I've been here so long. I've seen generation families grow up. It will be a very, very sad day." Mr. Osborne says it has not been decided what will happen to his business after closure, but he admitted he's not yet ready to retire ahead of his 60th birthday in October. Although his last day is September the 20th, the official lease ends on September 28th, allowing the Osbornes time to wind up the business behind the scenes. And on a personal note, I know many, many, many local people will sadly miss the closing of this butcher's shop. I wish my good friend David all the best for the future, and I'll see you soon, buddy. Man arrested over racially aggravated rape. Police have arrested a man in connection with the racially aggravated rape of a Sikh woman in Albury. A man in his 30s was detained on Sunday as part of inquiries into the assault in the Tame Road area last Tuesday morning. The victim, a Sikh woman, was racially abused in the course of the attack, which led to a massive outpouring of support from the community, which included a 500-strong protest in Smethwick and Albury on Sunday. The man remained in custody overnight on suspicion of rape. The woman is continuing to receive support as investigations continue. Chief Superintendent Kim Madhill of Sandwell Police said, "This is a significant development in the investigation. We want to thank the community for their continuing support. The investigation remains ongoing. We would urge people not to speculate as we work to identify and trace all those who may have been involved." She added, "We would remind everyone that legal proceedings are now active and we'd stress the importance of allowing the judicial process to follow its course. Anyone with information can contact West Midlands Police by calling 101 or via Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111, quoting log 798 of September the 9th. Society winding up retirement scheme after buy-in transaction. This article's by Deborah Hardiman. The West Brom is advising its pensioners and the beneficiaries that its staff retirement scheme is being wound up. The Building Society has issued a public notice stating, "Notice is hereby given pursuant to Section 27 of the Trustee Act 1925 that the trustees of the West Bromwich Building Society staff retirement scheme are winding up the scheme. The wind-up of the scheme commenced on August the 20th. Any creditor, member or beneficiary of the scheme or any other person who believes they have a claim against or interest in the scheme is requested to write to the trustees by November the 7th to make a claim. This may include employees or former employees of West Bromwich Building Society or West Bromwich Mortgage Company Limited or their survivors. After November the 7th, the trustees will proceed to wind up the scheme and secure benefits for any remaining beneficiaries, having regard only to the claims and interests of which they have prior notice. Any person who has been contacted by the trustees at their current address or has already made a claim and received a response need not reapply to the trustees. Claimants should state their full name, address, date of birth and details of the period of employment to which their claim relates. The retirement scheme was subject to a $70 million buy-in transaction with Canada Life last November, in a transaction aimed to secure the benefits of all uninsured scheme members, covering 490 deferred members and 400 pensioner members. At the time, Trust Chairman Glyn Smith said the buy-in was a very important step. For claims, write to the trustees of the West Bromwich Building Society Staff Retirement Scheme, care of Lane Clark and Peacock LLP, St Paul's House, St Paul's Hill, Winchester, Hampshire, SO225AB, or via email to westbromadmin@lepuk.com or phone 01962 454 623.
Are you ready? Bin collections in Sandwell to change to alternate weekly collections from Monday the 15th of September. Sandwell Council will introduce alternate weekly collections and a new dual stream recycling service. This means that bins will be collected on alternate weeks, with recycling one week and non-recycling the next, or the other way round, depending on each household's schedule. These changes are being made to meet the government's simpler recycling legislation. Quick reminder of what goes where. Recycling, blue bag for paper, cardboard, cartons. Recycling, blue lid, bin for plastic, glass bottles, tins, cans. Non-recycling, grey bin for general waste that cannot be recycled. Food waste, brown bin for cooked, raw and leftover food. Free weekly service, sign up online. Remember to crush, squash and flatten items. Watch our explainer videos about the changes to bin collections at sandwell.gov.uk/bin videos. Check your bin day finder for your new collection day at sandwell.gov.uk/bin day. For frequently asked questions and more information and support about bin changes, visit sandwell.gov.uk/bins. Sandwell receives national recognition for Blue Badge Fraud Crackdown. The British Parking Awards have recognised Sandwell Council and APCOA for cracking down on blue badge misuse and fraud to help protect spaces for people who are disabled or have mobility issues. Since April 2023, Sandwell Council has brought 30 successful prosecutions for blue badge fraud. The authority has also issued a further 31 warning letters and cancelled one blue badge. The figures include 25 prosecutions and 18 warning letters since April 2024, showing how the crackdown has stepped up over the past year. The council and APCOA were shortlisted in a new breakout award category that recognises frontline teams taking action to deliver safer streets. Sandwell has responded to people's concerns about the growing misuse of blue badges, recognising how important it is to keep designated parking spaces available for some of the borough's most vulnerable residents. The council's counter-fraud unit, parking enforcement team, adult social care team, legal services and APCOA are all working together to tackle the issue. Sandwell's approach has involved further training for officers to identify, record and investigate suspected incidents of blue badge misuse to help pursue offenders, alongside raising greater public awareness of the proper use of blue badges and how Sandwell is taking firm action on fraud. Please call our hotline on 0121 569 2650 or email fraud_investigation@sandwell.gov.uk with any information. Go to sandwell.gov.uk/report fraud for further advice. Anyone who thinks they may be eligible for a blue badge should visit sandwell.gov.uk/blue badge or call 0121 569 2266.
Now here's the SVI newsletter in full for the coming activities for the end of September into October, read by Trevor.
Hello, this is Trevor reading the Sandwell Visually Impaired CIO activities letter. Dear SVI members and friends, looks like autumn is here, but we aren't quite ready to give up the last of the sunshine and the great outdoors just yet. So take a look at what we have to offer. We've got activities for those of you who want to enjoy being outside and those who prefer to take part in our indoor sessions. Summer walk and talk programme. Our members have said that the walks so far have been very interesting and informative, that they help you get your step count up. Come along to take part in our last walk and talk session. Blackheath Walk, Monday, 22nd of September at 4 p.m. We will meet outside Lloyds Bank, High Street, Blackheath at 4 p.m. We will walk to the recently refurbished Britannia Park, experiencing the sights and sounds of autumn. We pass the site of the famous Church in the Garden and hear something about its history. We will explore more of Blackheath's civic and industrial past before heading to the Britannia Inn, Wetherspoons, for refreshments. This is a chance to sit down, relax and have something to eat and a chat with other walkers. This walk will be led by Nigel Self, funded through Sandwell Active Travel Community Grant. Dartmouth Park walks every Thursday from 12 noon. There's still time to join us every Thursday until 21st of October, so come and enjoy the changing. We will meet at the main gates of Dartmouth Park near the War Memorial at 12 noon. Following a leisurely stroll, we will finish at a local hostelry for welcome refreshments. Please tell us if you are coming on our walks so that we make sure we have enough sighted guides. Women's Group. Macmillan Coffee Morning, Monday, 22nd of September from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. SVI Women's Group invite you all to come along to help raise money for Macmillan Cancer Support. Ladies of SVI, get baking or create your signature goodies. Gents, put your pinnies on and bake for us too. If you don't bake, bring a cake. If you want to, coffee, tea, hot chocolate and yummy cakes will be on offer for a kind donation. All monies raised will be given to Macmillan. All are welcome to join us and be tempted by our tasty treats. Please do try to be part of this fundraising event. Cake away will be on offer too. Women's Group Pamper Day. We're looking at a Pamper Day at the Copthorne Hotel, Maryhill in October. In order to book this, we need numbers. Please contact the office to let us know if you're interested. Costs would be in the region of £50 plus transport. SVI Men's Group. The SVI Men's Group meet the third Wednesday of every month in the SVI Common Room. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, the 15th of October. Join the men to play cards, dominoes and visually impaired friendly darts. You've got an accessible game, please bring it along. Guest speakers come along from time to time, so watch out for any updates from us. Tea and toast on the first Wednesday of every month from 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. This is a welcoming, informal session where we invite guest speakers with up-to-date information on a range of topics. Come along to enjoy catching up with friends over a slice of toast and a cuppa. Each month we invite someone from a local service we think you will find interesting and informative. Wednesday the 1st of October. Andy Littlewood from National Energy Action, who have lots of hints and tips on how to save energy and money. Andy will bring some free goodies to give away too. Wednesday the 5th of November. Kendra Alcock from HEAT. Arts and Crafts from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. starting Wednesday the 1st of October. Art therapy instructor Zunaira will be joining us in the SVI Common Room for a free 6-week arts and crafts class. Come along and you'll let your creative juices flow. Call us now to book your place. SVI Rocks is coming back Wednesday the 8th of October. Rodrigo and Sally Ann are back. SBI Rock Session start again on Wednesday the 8th of October. Register now to be one of our festive music making misfits. These sessions will culminate in a festive performance. Socialised trip to Hypney Green Vineyard for a talk, tour, tasting and a cream tea on the 30th of October. You're invited to join us for an informative and an entertaining visit to the Hypney Green Vineyard. We will discover the history of winemaking in England, go on a short tour of the vineyard and have our very own tasting session. Afterwards, we'll enjoy a delicious cream tea. The day will start with transport from West Bromwich Bus Station at 10:30 a.m. On arrival at Hypney Green Airport, there will be free time for you to purchase refreshments at the cafe or visit the craft village. Our talk and tour will begin at 12 noon with cream tea at 1:30 p.m. Afterwards, there'll be more free time to browse. A great opportunity to get started on your Christmas shopping. We will return to West Brom for 4 p.m. The cost of the trip, including transport, will be £28 per person. Get active with us. Splash out with our AquaFit sessions every Wednesday afternoon starting from the 3rd of September. Don't fancy walking in the rain, but don't mind getting wet. Join us from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the Portway Lifestyle Centre Therapy Pool. Get the benefit of exercise without putting too much pressure on aching joints. This type of exercise helps you keep flexible and mobile. The heated therapy pool is lovely, just like a warm bath, and will help you relax too. Portway Lifestyle Centre Gym every Tuesday from 10 till 12 noon. Fancy a gym workout with the support you need to join in? Come along to Portway on Tuesday mornings and give it a try. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club on Tuesday afternoons from 1 till 2:30 p.m. Ray and Jean, our welcoming and friendly line dance instructors, are very kindly volunteering their time to lead the dancing every Tuesday afternoon. Line dancing is a great way to get fit, improve your balance and coordination, and meet new and old friends. Please note there is no line dancing on Tuesday the 30th of September. Showdown sessions at the Portway Lifestyle Centre have changed to Tuesday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Showdown is a fast-moving sport with similarities to table tennis and air hockey. It was designed for people with visual impairment, but anyone can play. Come along to one of our sessions and try it out for yourselves. Wear comfortable clothing and flat, non-slip footwear. Sandwell Macular Group. We warmly welcome the Macular Group, who meet in the SVI Common Room every second Tuesday of the month. They will meet here on Tuesdays, 14th of October and 11th of November, between 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. They will have guest speakers, refreshments and friendly conversation. If you're not already a member of the Macular Group, contact us to find out more. Save the date. Our annual forum and age is on Monday the 17th of November. More details will be sent to you near the date. Sandra Troth, Development Worker.
Albion Match Report. Andreas Wyman's first Derby County goal for more than 7 years helped the Rams upstage West Bromwich Albion for their first championship win of the season. The Austrian international netted just 4 minutes after coming off the bench against his former club in a game of few chances. Wyman's 84th-minute winner came from the Rams' only effort on target, while the closest the hosts came to a goal was a late effort from Jason Malumbi that crashed off the crossbar. The smash-and-grab nature of Derby's dramatic victory put a dampener on West Brom's celebrations to mark 125 years at the Hawthorns. It also extends Derby's fine recent record against the Baggies, with the win not only their second over Ryan Mason's side this season, after knocking them out of the Carabao Cup on penalties in August, but also their sixth victory in succession in all competitions. In a largely uneventful game, the most dramatic moments were condensed into the final minutes. First, Derby goalkeeper Jakob Widol Zetterstrom, who had already been tested by Isaac Price and Nat Phillips, made a huge save to deny Malumbi. Wyman then met a flicked header from fellow substitute Patrick Adjemang, the United States international making his hugely anticipated debut for the Rams, to cut inside before finding the bottom corner to break the deadlock. It was Wyman's first goal since returning to Derby for a second spell in the summer, having left for Bristol City in 2018, before going to play for West Brom and Blackburn. Malumbi went on to hit the woodwork in search of an equaliser for a frustrated West Brom side that slipped from second to fifth in the table. Meanwhile, Derby's first 3 points of the season moved them up to 19th. Albion boss Ryan Mason said, "I think anyone watching the game will say we didn't deserve to lose it when conceding your first shot on target in the 84th minute. It's tough to take, but we accept it and have to move on. It won't take away from the fact that it was a really good performance. I thought we had so much control of the game, especially in the first half when we created numerous chances. It just didn't really go our way today, which happens, but it was a positive performance. Obviously, I'm hurting at the moment, and the players are, because we lost a game of football that we didn't deserve to lose."
Before we close this edition, just a few more minutes walking along the canal.
Is this stretch of the canal used for boating?
It is, but it's not very well used, because it doesn't really go anywhere, because it goes up to Warsaw and it's a dead end. But there is a plan to open another canal which went all the way through to Lichfield, which would make it a through route. Now, that canal up towards Lichfield, it's gradually being restored, but it'll still take years and probably decades before it's open again. But we really need that so that this becomes a through route, and it'll be used more.
There used to be a pub down here as well. I think it was called the Eight Locks.
That's the Eight Locks was at the top of the locks. Yeah. In that direction, yeah. But it's no longer a pub, sadly, although the building's still there at the top of the locks. Right, carry on. Okay, folks, well, we've come up from off the Warsaw Canal onto Bailey's Lane, which is a road that comes down from Toland. Now, we're standing on another bridge here, going over another canal, and this is called the Lower Ockerill Branch, and it's a dead-end canal, which amazingly survived. And it's now in use as residential moorings, and you can see all these boats here. People live on the boats, and it's one of Tipton's best kept secrets, because it's a lovely quiet spot, nice and enclosed, and must be quite a nice place to live on a boat moored up here out of the way.
Well, can they get off that moorings and into the other canal?
Yeah, they can do. They can just go down onto the main canal that way, yeah. If they want to go off travelling.
Yeah. So don't go any further down there.
No, that's the end of it, the two dead ends, the two arms. But the reason this canal survived was because the power station here used to take water out for cooling purposes at the power station. And also, right until the end of the 60s, there was a coal wharf at the end. And in fact, you can still see the little brick building there is the Weybridge office for the coal wharf. So the canal was still in use commercially until the end of the 1960s.
Thank you to all our Sandwell volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Alison and Trevor. Special thanks to Trevor for also doing the SVI activities letter for us this time. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz, Cyrita for uploading everything to the website, and to Sue for picking the articles, and of course to Ray, Tony and Gavin for the editing and compiling and putting onto CD and USB as they do every week. Well, thanks everyone, and have a lovely week everyone.
Thank you, Pam. That wraps things up for this week. Hope you've enjoyed listening to what seemed a very crammed edition, although it's a bit shorter than usual perhaps. Nothing really to report in addition, except I hope in the very near future, for those of you who can get podcasts, we hope to get the Sandwell News as a regular podcast to those who've got podcast apps on their phones or specialist devices. But we'll tell you more about that when there's something to tell you. In the meantime, I must wrap up for now. The weather is certainly cooler than it was, and time for a bit of heating, especially in the evening, which I'm sure everyone is finding now. So we'll be back with you next week for the final week's edition for September. In the meantime, take care, and we'll all be back with you next week with the next edition of the Talking News. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.